It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, robot parade, robot parade. Wave the flags that the robots made. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today, our third host, Joe McCormick, is not with us, but he will be back soon. And in the meanwhile, if you couldn't tell, we're going to be talking about robots again.
Yep, robots.
Robots.
So it's a shame that Joe can't be here because he actually pitched the other show we'll be recording and that will come out later this week that also has to do about robots. But we're going to do our best to uphold the high standards of robot integrity that,
yes,
that Joe embodies. Because, as we all know, Joe is 40% robot.
He is. Mostly, yeah. Most of that 40% is clamps.
Yeah, a lot of clamps.
But they're delightful clamps.
And
really, integrity is what this episode is going to be about.
Yeah, it's kind of... All right, so a little backstory here.
Yeah.
Back at the end of May, there was a report that came out that sparked a lot of conversation about robots and rights. And so we're going to talk about what that was and what was said in that report. But before we get to that, we should also mention that this episode has a lot of tie-ins with tons of other episodes we have previously recorded, because as it turns out, we love us some robots.
We talk about robots a lot,
yeah,
here on the show about the future of technology and science, strangely enough. So we've got What Happens When a Robot Breaks the Law from March of 2016. Was that so recently?
Yeah, that was
pretty...
It feels
like it was a million years ago.
I know, right? Yeah, and then there's also Will Robots Steal Our Jobs, which was in December 2014, and Will Robots Take Our Jobs in May 2015. Something tells me we didn't really pay attention when we recorded
maybe
the second one.
Those have been a video? What? I'm not sure.
It might have been. Okay. It could be that one of those is a video, or it could very well be that we recorded
Good job,
two episodes.
Us. with the same title.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, this is an ongoing conversation that is getting more and more complicated. We also have one on universal basic income, which ties into those concepts as well.
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, when robots steal our jobs, that is when universal basic income is going to need to be a thing.
How do I get my monies?
Right.
We also have AI, friend or foe. From April 2014. What if the president were a robot? That was also a Joe suggestion. That was also April 2014.
Uh-huh.
And more.
Yes. If we listed every single episode, I mean, really just pull up our RSS feed and search robot. And
I think I got 134 hits. Now, to be fair, that also includes all the metadata.
Sure.
So robot shows up a lot,
okay.
But 134 hits, and we have not been recording that show that long. I mean,
no.
So why are we going to talk about it again? Because there was a report for the European Parliament. That's the one that I was talking about that came out at the end of May and had proposed some provisions to grant personhood to robots, electronic personhood.
Robot personhood.
Yeah, among other things. That's electronic personhood is probably the element that I think has had the most conversation around it after this report came out.
Yeah, because it's kind of the flashiest one, and it's sort of the most far-reaching part of the report.
Right.
But a lot of the report is actually very grounded and down-to-earth, and I love it. Like, I love a lot of the ideas in here. So, yeah, we were really excited about talking with ourselves and to you guys.
Yeah.
I was about to say with you guys, but I guess you can't participate.
I mean, they can talk back. We just
can.
We're not ignoring you. We just literally cannot hear you.
Wait, was... Oh, no.
No, that's Noel.
No,
that's
okay.
Noel. He's eating something crunchy. At any rate, so we wanted to really kind of boil down what was in this report, because there's a lot more to it than just the electronic personhood. Like you were saying, Lauren, that gets a lot of attention because it's like saying, would you give your vacuum cleaner rights? But we've had these discussions here on this show. The cool thing is, at the end of those discussions, we always like, you know, we really need to talk about this.
Yeah, it would be wonderful if elected officials would begin considering this sort of thing.
And it's happening.
I know.
It's crazy. All right, so the report came out May 31st, 2016. We should also say it's a draft report, or at least that's how it's titled.
Yeah, it's a proposal.
Yeah, and it's called Draft Report with Recommendations to the Commission on Civil Law Rules on Robotics.
Oh,
which
governments,
is a thing.
The capacity to make even very exciting things sound very dull.
I mean, there's got to be a rule somewhere that if you are proposing something or you've created a report, that the title must be one of two things. It must either be excessively long and
with at least one colon.
Right. And by being excessively long, you have already told somebody everything they need to know about what's in the report. Or it has to incorporate a stupid acronym that has been tortured so that it can encompass the various concepts that are in the report. And if you're lucky, you get both.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing about this report, it had some awesome stuff in it. So, first of all, the general purpose of the proposal is to start those official discussions and developing policies and guidelines in the field of robotics, particularly since individual member states in the European Union are developing their own policies over time. So, the fear is that you're going to get all these different countries making their individual rules, and then you're going to have conflicts between the way one country legislates robotics and the way another one does.
Mm-hmm. And especially in the European Union, where everyone is working together very closely and literally working in other countries than the one of their own origin.
Right.
It gets really important really quickly to have agreement in all of this.
Exactly. Like, yeah, if you got your training and your experience in one country in the European Union and you are working in the robotics field in some capacity, and then you take an opportunity in a different country in the European Union, which is perfectly legitimate, you might find yourself struggling because these different member states have different rules. This is a proposal to make more of an umbrella of rules so that it's kind of an even playing ground throughout the entire European Union.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to tell you how cool this report is in many ways, the introduction of the proposal, at the very beginning, Section A under Introduction, they reference Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, the Pygmalion myth. They also, I didn't put it in the notes, they also mention the Prague Golem. They mention Carol Capek's RUR, or Rossum's Universal Robots, from where the term robot originates.
Yes, that's where it was coined.
Yep. And it's already 10 times more awesome than any government proposal I've ever read, because you've got all these things in the introduction talking about throughout our history, we have created fiction that talks about our desire to create a synthetic
life.
Form of life, or yeah. at least intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
In their case, they were talking about intelligent machines, although I would argue Frankenstein's monster is not really a machine. It's a artificial
machine.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, on the same level that any human is a machine.
Sure.
Now, Section B, each of these sections, by the way, is like a paragraph under the introduction. But Section B of the introduction posits that we're on the threshold of a new industrial revolution that is powered by artificial intelligence, and that no part of society will remain unaffected by this revolution, and so it's wise to consider the implications now.
Again, which is what we say basically at the end of every single podcast that we do about robots.
Right, and particularly ones about the idea of, you know, will automation ultimately take more jobs than it creates? How are we going to deal with that? That's really what that paragraph is getting at, saying, look, we can't even fully anticipate the consequences of this. We know it's happening. We know that robotics and artificial intelligence, machine learning, automation, all of these things are going to lead to a crazy amount of change on par with the Industrial Revolution of the past. We need to start talking about that in an official capacity, not just like thought experiments, but actually like let's lay down some guidelines so that we don't mess things up too much.
And by way of kind of providing proof of that, it points out that robot sales have been increasing.
Exactly. Yeah, they're saying that robot sales been on the rise, especially in areas like car manufacturer, automotive industry. The automation in the automotive industry has really been on the rise, as well as just in electronics in general. And also states that robots will provide numerous benefits in the short to medium term, with a potential for, quote, virtually unbounded prosperity, end quote, in the long term.
That's a lovely phrase.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Star Trek belief where you've got like everything on demand all the time because of this wondrous world. It's probably not going to quite that extent, because as we have talked about in the past, to get to that Star Trek future, we'd also have to find like some sort of crazy energy source.
Yeah.
And we don't have dilithium crystals yet, so.
Not yet.
No.
Keep digging, everyone.
Yep. So, the flip side, however, because this isn't all about just sunshine and roses here.
Robotic roses.
No, they wanted to say like, hey, we got to consider some of the possible bad things about this.
Mm-hmm.
They say that these advances, quote, may result in a large part of the work now done by humans being taken over by robots, end quote. And that would affect not just employment, but also systems like Social Security, which rely on employment taxes for funding. So,
which is a thing that I had somehow never thought about before, but is so clear. I mean, once it's pointed out, it's like, of course, Social Security is a thing that we need to think about in this crazy future of robots taking our gerbs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you are not having enough money paid into Social Security because so many jobs have been taken over by automated systems, then Social Security itself can no longer perform the function it's meant to do, and you start to see a pretty precipitous decline in the quality of life for thousands, millions of people.
Right. Well, based on that current system, I mean, obviously, if we had something like basic universal income, then
that would help. But then
how are you funding that?
Exactly. Like, if you don't have people working, they can't make money, and you can't tax them. I mean, like, they're not earning income. Yeah, you could, but they just have even less. I mean, like, you're kind of...
It'd be like, I have these fingernail clippings.
Right,
what do you want?
Yeah, I've got some, like, old newspapers in the garage I can give you. I mean, I was saving them for some reason, but...
Paper mache.
Yeah, it's just... And so, again, this proposal is saying, look, we're acknowledging that these issues are right on the cusp of happening today. We need to start seriously talking about it.
Right. And furthermore, on this kind of social issue side, what happens when a robot breaks a thing, including a person?
Yeah.
We need some legal recourse for figuring that out.
Exactly. And we need to be able to assign liability in those issues. We need to also understand, how do robots and humans interact in a way that is a positive experience for humans? Sometimes that means creating an experience that appears to be a positive experience for robots, because even though at this stage, I would argue robots can't appreciate a person being polite to a robot, for example.
Right. The robot don't care.
Yeah, it doesn't. It lacks the capacity. We have not programmed it to love as of yet, but
or to feel slighted.
Sometimes, by creating a system that encourages people to behave in a way toward robots that they would toward another human being, a positive way, I would
fingers
add,
crossed.
Yes, that actually has a benefit on the person, right? Like we've seen some interesting studies about when you create responses in robots so that they seem to understand when they get something right or get something wrong, and they seem to have an emotional
reaction. Right.
People are feeling more receptive toward those robots and work more easily with those robots. And so, again, while it may not have a direct benefit to the robot in any, you know, psychological way, it has a benefit on us as we interact with those robots.
Yeah.
Which is, it's one of those things that you don't necessarily think about when you start talking about policies. Also, they say, hey, what happens if robots like get super smart, like way more, like more than human smart?
Yeah.
Like not just human smart, but they're also autonomous so that they can act on that smart. They don't necessarily need to be conscious or self-aware, just really, really intelligent. And so essentially they're saying we need to think about the possibility of robots becoming a danger to the human species. Like, let's not create a bot that's going to kill us. Let's not Skynet this thing.
No, not that.
Yeah, let's do the opposite of that. Well, maybe not the opposite, but, you know, a different option at least.
Yes.
So, considering all of those things, the introduction concludes, the European Union should really get off its duff and start talking about these ideas and work on a strategy to avoid problems in the future. So that's just the introduction.
Yeah. It's just laying everything out there for you.
And then what they do later on in the report is kind of lay down general principles and some guidelines that they would suggest. But those guidelines are very general. You're going to hear the same thing throughout the rest of this podcast where they say, we need to form a committee.
Yeah.
Specifically to set this up.
Yeah, this entire proposal is like one of those meetings that you're just sitting there and planning more meetings for the future.
Right. And then eventually you, later on down the road, hold a meeting to discuss how you can have fewer meetings.
Yeah.
And that's when everyone loses their mind and runs screaming from the room. But right now we're at a stage where they are saying, like, hey, we don't have all the answers. Mm-hmm. This document is not meant to be.
This is not an answer. This is just a suggestion for how we might come up with the answers.
Exactly. This isn't that guide you would find in Beetlejuice about how to, how to work with the recently diseased. I'm sorry, deceased. It's a joke that's in the movie. Anyway, so the next section is titled General Principles, or the beginning of it is General Principles, and the report cites Asimov's Laws of Robotics.
So because, of course, they do.
Geek reference number, like, 18! Again, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So if you are rusty on Asimov's Laws of Robotics, they are, first,
a robot may not harm a human or, through inaction, allow a human to come to harm.
Second,
a robot must obey any orders given by a human unless it would violate the first law.
Third,
a robot must protect itself from harm unless doing so would conflict with either of the first two laws.
Fourth and or zeroth, depending on how you choose, because it was added a little bit later, a robot may not harm humanity or, by inaction, allow humanity to come to harm.
Now, these are not innate laws, right?
These are just good ideas.
These were good ideas that a science fiction author came up with for the purposes of creating interesting narratives that would show how even these very basic ideas could sometimes have
go
consequences.
Yeah.
That you didn't anticipate. Mm-hmm. But we generally, since then, have said, those laws of robotics seem like a really good idea.
Those kind of lay it out just how we want it. Yeah,
if you got a big old metal thing that weighs like a half ton and it can move around and whack stuff, let's try and make sure it doesn't whack people.
Yeah. Preferably.
So then we get the liability section. Talking about whacking people, this is it. This is what this is about, right? Like, how do we determine who is or what is liable in various scenarios? And this relates very closely to that podcast we did in the past about what happens if a robot breaks the law.
Yeah.
So we get to a point where this is where The report first suggests that the European Union might need to classify robots under a new category, either like a category like persons, like essentially say, can we treat robots like people in the sense of liability?
Uh-huh. Like legally speaking.
Legally speaking. Or would it be more like animals? Would it be more like objects? Or do we need to create an entirely new classification?
For an intelligent, non-human entity.
Right, right. Something that can behave at least semi-autonomously. And
something harder than a dolphin,
yeah.
But less bound to the sea.
Yes. So first thing they point out is that AI and machine learning are transforming how robots interact with environments. And we wouldn't necessarily call even the most advanced AI that we have operating today anything close to being conscious or self-aware, but that almost doesn't really matter, right? It could still be active in a way that could potentially be harmful. And we're seeing more applications that allow machines to learn from their environments and adapt their approaches to complete certain tasks.
Yeah.
That complicates things.
The whole autonomous part that makes robots useful.
Yeah. And the idea that, you know, since we've been seeing machine learning, like, go from observing a pendulum and determining what the laws of physics must be based upon those movements up to the, you know, learning what a cat is based upon just feeding it information.
Right.
You know, and then getting to a point where we can maybe create an artificial intelligence, set it in a room, give it a task, and have it learn from its mistakes so that it eventually begins to do that task more and more efficiently.
Right.
That's creating something very different from just this machine will follow a specific set of instructions and repeat it exactly
every time.
Until it breaks. Right?
Right. And because right now, the way that robots work, take a Roomba, for example.
Yeah.
Nice, easy thing that you may or may not have interacted with. Right now, if a Roomba trips you and you die.
Yeah.
You sue the company. You sue iRobot, yes?
I think so, yeah. Exactly. Believe it is iRobot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that would be, that's exactly the case, because robots right now, for the most part, are essentially machines that do a very specific task, and they do it pretty much the same way every time. Even mm-hmm. with something like the Roomba, which has some object avoidance and some other
a little bit of things. Learning for mapping purposes,
but it's very basic, yeah. Right? It's not like the Roomba is suddenly going to vacuum in a totally different way, right? It can't. It lacks that capability.
Yeah.
But at this point, we would say, all right, well, if the machine were to cause harm through its normal operations, you would essentially say the manufacturer, the producer of that robot,
maybe the programmer, sure.
is liable, right?
And,
but that gets more complicated as you get into these devices that have machine learning and autonomy.
Yeah, because if it's learning how to do new stuff, if it's interacting with an environment that the programmer didn't account for,
right.
and therefore learns something harmful.
Then do you blame the manufacturer? The report actually says that the more it learns, the less you can really blame the creator, right? That its behaviors that it's learning are due to whatever environment and variables it's encountering. And it may very well be that if you were to trace that behavior all the way back down to the germ of an idea, the nugget of programming that eventually evolved into that behavior, it would be very difficult to say, well, this is clearly the fault of the manufacturer, which means that maybe the robot itself has to be liable, which raises questions like, well, how do you deal with that?
Yeah.
You've got a bad robot. I mean, the robot can't think or feel. You can't punish if you punish the robot, it would be meaningless, right? Like, the robot can't feel badly about it. It can't learn from that experience. It can't be like, wow, it put me in solitary and now I'm going to really turn
I'm
things
so
around.
Penitent. Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to get like a robot Shawshank Redemption thing going.
I mean, it's really shady whether or not humans are penitent by being put in penitentiary.
That is an episode I want to do. But yes, episode. But
that would be a lovely and upsetting episode.
Probably a lot of not shouting at each other, but shouting just into the void.
Just, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of that. But at any rate, getting back to the robots, so the report says we need to perhaps come up with some definitions so that we can figure out ways to assign liability in those cases where machines are having this level of artificial intelligence and autonomy.
Yeah, and it furthermore proposes to create a system of registration for robots that are so advanced that this could become a problem.
Yeah, this is like almost like saying, you know, the way you might have to register a weapon.
Right.
The idea that, right, you know, at a robot that has a sufficient level of intelligence also carries with it a certain amount of risk toward humans. And that intelligence may not necessarily come in the form of physical violence. It could come in the form of sharing your information in a way that you had not anticipated.
Right.
Or perhaps spying in the sense of like a video surveillance type of issue. So there, the draft says maybe we need to have a registration system. And once a robot reaches a certain threshold, whether it's a threshold in, you know, artificial intelligence or just the various features in the robot, at that point, the producer must register the robot so that there is a government document connected with that specific entity, mm-hmm, in the case that that entity goes robo-berserk or makes a mistake or operates in a way that was unintended but causes harm. In any of those scenarios, you got to have a way to assign that liability. So this would, again, fall into that category.
Right. And then in order to kind of assist with that, it calls for more funding for research projects, particularly the ones that are looking into these social and ethical challenges that are raised by these kinds of advancements.
Right. Because the report recognizes, they said, hey, we realize this is not...
This is new.
This is new. It's going to require experts, and it's going to require funding. It's going to require money. So we need to actually seriously talk about this. Not just say, like, hey, let's throw ideas around, but let's create specific entities. And those entities have the responsibility of really seriously tackling these issues and coming up with guidelines that are aligned with those ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And that the European Union should create, quote, legislative instruments on legal questions related to the development of robotics and AI, end quote, that looks ahead 10 to 15 years.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's hard to do.
That's nuts.
We love to speculate about the future. Obviously, that's what this podcast is all about.
That's literally what we do here. Yes. But we also make so many jokes about 20 to 40 years.
Yeah. And also, wow, gosh, I keep forgetting how awesome that little jingle is. Also, what we say doesn't become law, right?
And thank goodness for that, Jonathan.
No joke. I mean, when we get that axe of destiny swinging around, you don't want that stuff to become... Sometimes we're whimsical, and by whimsical, I also mean...
Terrifying?
Capricious to a level that's probably irresponsible. Anyway.
The last time I took a test, I came out chaotic neutral.
Yeah? That's terrifying. Chaotic neutral is the scariest of the alignments.
Isn't it fun?
I mean, chaotic evil, at least you know that whatever they're going to do, it's going to be bad. Chaotic neutral, it's just like, I'm going to close my eyes and throw a dart. Will it hit a board? Maybe. So the interesting thing here, though, again, is that they want to look at creating, again, a specific official entity that is dedicated to answering legal questions and speculating about what questions will need to be answered more than a decade out. So saying, let's not wait until we've reached a technological level of sophistication where we then have to backtrack and figure out a way to litigate around issues.
Yeah, it's saying let's proactively get out there and be looking for the most cutting edge, the most ridiculous even possibilities that could come up in the future, and let's plan just a little bit for those.
Yeah, and it's so different from the way we've seen the law and technology interact in the past, right?
Yeah.
Typically, we see technological advancement leap way ahead of technology, and then we have this incredibly...
A scramble.
Yeah, and it tends to be messy.
And kind of embarrassing, if we're being real honest.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the internet and telecommunications here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's been a huge pain in the butt, and that has led to big arguments about net neutrality. And so what this draft proposal is saying is that they want to avoid having as many of those scenarios as possible by proactively thinking ahead. It's just, I don't know how they're going to do it in a way that it may very well mean that they create policies that are covering a specific pathway, and as we see technology take a different pathway, they'll just have to switch gears.
Yeah.
It's a challenging thing. I'm sure it would be a very frustrating thing in many ways, but it's also really important. So the draft proposal also calls for a legal solution that doesn't restrict the type or extent of damages a person can seek based solely on the fact that the damage that was caused came from a non-human agent. In other words, you should never have a situation where a court tells you, well, we can only award you X number of dollars or euro in this case because your mugger was a robot. So there shouldn't be a specific limit just because of the robot being the cause
right,
of the problem.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, also, like, don't create a mugging robot, y'all. But
yeah,
that's,
I mean,
rude.
That's going down the Futurama path, which, while entertaining, is really not practical.
Yeah.
No hobo bots, no orphan bots. Come on, just... Don't do those.
But joking aside, I mean, we're already seeing a need for this. In cases, for example, like the recent and tragic death that resulted from a Tesla car crash just a couple weeks ago, the driver had his Tesla car in autopilot mode, which is not, in fact, autopilot, but rather a driver assist kind of function.
Yeah, yeah. I have multiple times over the last week yelled that we maybe need to change the name of that feature, that it is inherently misleading.
But right, I mean, you know, in this case where this driver was in the car was in driver assist mode, neither the driver nor the computer in the car recognized that a semi-truck that was crossing his path was there because of just glare conditions, or maybe the dude was looking away. I don't know.
We don't have I don't think all the details will ever be available because we just don't know what was happening at that moment. But as you're pointing out, like, this is an issue where there's the question, who ultimately is liable in this case? And without having the legislation there to kind of frame that,
it means that
the courts have to start figuring it out on their own and
on the fly.
That's a rough way to make legislation.
Yeah.
So, moving on with the liability section, they also suggest that the producers of a robot are liable for damage on a level proportionate with the amount of instructions the producers gave the robot.
Now, this is the part that I find really fascinating.
Yeah, so this would be like, the more simple your robot, the more liable the producers are for any damage the robot creates.
Yeah, if you get crushed by a dumb robot, it's the manufacturer's fault.
Right, because they're the ones who, like, if the robot can only follow instructions that were created by the manufacturer, and through the operation the robot has hurt someone, then the manufacturer would be considered liable, assuming that you're not having a situation where a person has flagrantly ignored warnings or safety features.
Right.
Like in a big automation thing, there's usually rails and all this other stuff separating the robot from people.
Do not walk into the clamp function of the robot.
Exactly.
Kind of warnings.
In those cases, you could argue that, well, the person who was hurt was at fault. But they're talking about in other situations where there was an unintended consequence in the normal operation of the robot. However, the more the robot acts as an autonomous entity, the lower the responsibility of the producers of the robot. So if a robot damages property or hurts someone through an autonomous decision that was not directly traced to its fundamental programming, in other words, this was some sort of learned behavior that went awry, the robot ends up being liable, not the producers of the robot, which is a pretty radical idea.
Yeah.
They also say that the longer a robot has received quote-unquote education, the more liable the robot's quote-unquote teacher is for any damage the robot causes. So in other words, if you have the robot in a lab setting and you're training it in a lab and you're training it over and over again with lots of different ways, and then you implement the robot somewhere and it hurts somebody, you could say, well, the teacher was the one training the behaviors.
Yeah, the manufacturer didn't do it. This person trained this robot to do this. So yeah. So if you get crushed by a dumb robot, it's the manufacturer's fault. If you get crushed by a smart robot, it's either the robot's fault or your own fault.
Yep. And so what do you do in that case? Like, all right, well, now we know whose fault it is. What then? Well, the report has some suggestions for that.
Yeah.
They said, what about an obligatory insurance scheme similar to that you would have to have if you wanted to operate a car?
Sure.
Except in this case, the people making the robots are the ones paying the insurance.
Which I'm not sure how I feel about. I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird because in this case you wouldn't say like going with the car metaphor, it'd be like saying, well, the car manufacturer, the automaker, has to pay for my car insurance.
And an idea which I love.
Yeah. Now, if it were an autonomous car, you might say, well, that makes sense because I'm not the one controlling the vehicle.
Right.
If it's a car that's under my control, however, you could argue, well, it's the driver's behaviors, unless you're talking about a faulty vehicle, in which case there could be a recall or something like that.
Sure, right.
So they're saying, no, the producers would pay out the insurance for the robots they create. And if the robot were to cause any damage, then that insurance would end up paying for that damage. Or there could be a compensation fund for the robots themselves.
Yeah, to pay them for all of their hard work so that they'll feel greater job satisfaction.
Right.
And be able to buy the good oil.
Right, exactly. Finally, they won't be sludging through like the used fry grease over at the fast food restaurant. They'll finally be able to go in and order a pint of WD-40 or something. No, this is not to make the robots feel better about the job they are doing. And actually, it's an interesting and practical solution to this issue, saying, let's have a compensation fund for each individual robot, not so that the robot has spending money, but so that if the robot were to cause harm, then there's actually money that belongs to the robot that could be paid out to the person who's injured or whoever owns the property that was damaged in the case of that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that the robot itself is paying for the damage
it caused.
Although ultimately it's whoever's compensating the robot.
Technically.
Yeah, but this is a way of saying like, well, you wouldn't go after the business necessarily if the robot itself had the funds in its compensation fund. And that you would even possibly invest money on behalf of the robot, which is so the robot would have its own 401k or something. It's weird, right?
Yeah. And that's the point in the proposal at which it says, again, like really, though, we're going to probably need a different legal distinction for robots
right.
at this level than just robot.
Yeah. And they also say that the compensation fund is just – it's a possible solution. They're not
right.
even saying like
right.
we're saying this has got to be the way. They first start with the idea of the insurance. Then they move on to possible compensation fund. But they admit, like, this is just the sort of brainstorming ideas we have and something that would need to go into further discussion with an actual committee. And then we move on to the next section, which is all about ethical principles. And it calls for the design of an ethical framework to make certain that advances in robotics are made with considerations to the impact on human safety, privacy, or privacy if you prefer, integrity, dignity, autonomy, and data ownership.
So, which is a really good spread. I'm proud of them for putting privacy and data ownership and stuff like that
I'm
in there, too.
Really impressed. I was consistently impressed by this report
yeah.
at seeing the scope that they were taking. Because it was so far beyond just simple ideas like they're taking our gerbs or
right.
or robots are big and scary and can smash my face in. Or things like, you know, the stuff that we typically talk about, they went well beyond that. I mean, they covered those items, too.
Sure.
But that was kind of cool. They go on to say that the risk of harm to a person should be no greater than that encountered in ordinary life. So in other words, in a future that's filled with robots in all sorts of roles, in the job, social robots, care robots, whatever they may be, a person should encounter no more risk than they do right now in an ordinary day. So robots should not make the world riskier, in
right.
other words.
Which is really what we're hoping for.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean,
to decrease the risk would be awesome.
I mean, right.
Yeah. But, I mean, at least
nice.
Don't make it worse.
Right.
So I love this idea. Like, well, like, look, we know how humans are.
Like, can we establish a baseline of suck in
right,
the world?
Exactly.
Like, can we make it not suck more?
If we open up any history book, we see our propensity for making things way worse early on in the development of any given technology. We think it'd be awesome if we didn't do that this time. So to do all of this, you know, they admit, like, this is a lot to talk about. They say that there must be a new European agency specifically dedicated to the field of robotics and artificial intelligence, and that it has to be funded properly. It can't just be an agency in name, and it needs to be staffed with technical experts as well as leaders in ethical and regulatory fields. So they're saying, like, We need smart people.
Yeah, we need people who understand the technology, who understand the hypotheticals about the technology,
right.
And also people who understand the law and understand how not to be dicks to people.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, this is not a small thing. This is, you know, yes, you need engineers. You need the people who know how to solve a problem, but you also need the ethical experts who can say, look, just because this is the most efficient way to solve the problem doesn't mean it's the right way.
Yeah.
Right? Especially when you have a world that also happens to have human beings in it. Right?
Which fingers crossed, again, like, yeah, you know, I'd like the future to have, I suppose.
Yeah, at least a couple,
yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, I need a couple of folks to watch my videos and listen to my podcast. Otherwise, what am I going to do?
Oh, right. And then it goes into a bunch of specific sections.
Yes.
About about more committees and
yeah, about more government
and more things to think about.
So, and we'll cover these in brief. So one of them is about intellectual property, mm-hmm. which they want to find a way to both protect and encourage innovation. So it's kind of like, you know, the idea of patents, the idea that they protect an idea, but they also allow people to see what the idea is. And then once the patent expires, they can also use that as the jumping off point for new inventions, that kind of stuff.
Right. And not only in terms of making robots, but in terms of what robots make.
This is the really, again, something I wouldn't have necessarily thought a government report would include in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they say, what about works that robots make? Like, let's say a robot writes a song. For example, we've talked about this in the past, about robots and their role in art and what is art and can a robot make art?
Yeah. And so there need to be laws in place for what happens when that happens, because it is happening right now.
Yeah. Who owns the copyright to the music a robot creates? Is it the manufacturer? Is it the person who owns the robot? Is it whomever gave...
Is it the robot itself?
Yeah, does the robot have ownership of that art?
Can the money it makes go back into that, like, oops, I killed someone fund?
Yeah, exactly right. Like, wow, our Paul McCartney bot went insane and slaughtered 14 people. Thank goodness it wrote that hit song 5 years back, because we can afford to pay off all the legal fees.
Oh no.
We laugh or we cry, folks. Those are our two choices.
Paul McCartney bot, don't do that.
It was the first name that popped in my head. And to be fair, I mean, come on, he's part robot too. So if this in fact happens, how do we assign that ownership? And again, they don't have the answer for it. They're just saying this is a question that we need to answer, so we need to bring it up and say, mm-hmm. This might seem frivolous, but it's absolutely something that is happening, and so we have to come up with our legal answer for it.
This next one is one that I'm so excited about. Standardization.
Yes.
And I feel like such a boring adult for being this excited about standardization.
But we've covered, like, home automation,
yeah.
Right? Home automation. One of the problems is that if you don't want all your stuff to come from the same company, how do you make sure that stuff can communicate with each other so you actually get that automated experience that you wanted?
Right. Or autonomous vehicles. I think this is one of the biggest hurdles that we're facing right now to autonomous vehicles, is how do we create a system where all of those vehicles from different manufacturers can talk to each other,
right.
Talk to the road, talk to the traffic signals, et cetera.
Yeah, where you can have that fully integrated system where cars are fully, they know where everyone is. They know where all the other cars are. Not only do they know where the other cars are, they know what the other cars are going to do before it starts to happen, because they can communicate with one another.
Mm-hmm.
Well, without those standards in place, you end up with a lot of proprietary systems where all the vehicles made by one company can talk to each other, but that only represents...
But they give the cold shoulder to those other cars.
Yeah, and they represent a tiny percentage of
right.
all the vehicles on the road. You don't really get a very... You don't have an integrated system in that approach. And so they're saying, well, we don't want to see that with this future of robotics. So let's start creating some standards that companies can follow when they're designing their products, so that we avoid this in the future and we have a more seamless integration. And in fact, they have another section on autonomous vehicles themselves. And they specifically call out for standards for those autonomous vehicles. They also mention care robots and medical robots. They're specifically in those cases talking about a need to develop robots that where you're specifically thinking about how are these going to affect humans.
Right. And just kind of, I think it was a call for like research and development into how we can create robots that can help with care of the sick or the elderly,
right,
or, you know, whatever group it is that, and how can we create robots that are providing care, not
right,
just physical services.
And to make sure it still maintains a sense of human dignity as well. Not just that they are effective in doing what they do, but they perform their duties in such a way that the person who's being cared for doesn't feel
less
for that.
Or worse.
Yeah.
Right.
And again, being someone who currently and thankfully is healthy and able-bodied, it is a weird it hadn't occurred to me. I'm so privileged in the place where I am in my life. It didn't even occur to me. And I'm so thankful to see that there are smart people talking about this. They also get into human repair and enhancement.
Enhancement, you say?
Yeah. So not just like, okay, well, we've developed this technology that is an artificial heart or an artificial kidney or an artificial liver or whatever. This is getting into when we develop technology that could actually create
upgrade.
Yeah, an upgrade to a human being
without prior injury. Yeah,
right.
Like not like this arm is defective. I need a new one. But
right,
like, you know, this arm is less cool than that robot arm.
My
I
wrist,
want a new one.
My wrist can't turn 360 degrees, so it's really a pain in the butt to put a light bulb back into a socket.
Slap a new one in there.
Yeah, I just want to have one where I can spin the wrist in that way, and I'm done. So they're saying, well, hey, this is going to happen. Maybe we need to start thinking about the ethics involved in this and actually get experts in hospitals and other healthcare institutions who are thinking about these kind of issues and start to work on legislation for that as well, so that we don't enter into an environment where people are just willy-nilly getting crazy upgrades. Maybe they're putting their own lives in danger as a result. Maybe they're creating a bigger divide between the haves and have-nots. They don't want to do that. So that's what that section is specifically about. Oh, and they also have a little section about drones.
Yeah.
In that bit. But I'm not going to cover it because it's essentially the kind of stuff you would imagine, like common sense things like privacy and security, that sort of
stuff. Airspace, yeah.
So then they get into the discussion about the impact on jobs and social systems. This is probably the section that got the most attention in the media about the idea of personhood. And
it's kind of also like the most immediate impact or ish.
Yeah, because we don't have robots at the level of artificial intelligence and autonomy in the general sphere that we have to worry about that right now. I mean, thinking about it now is good, but it's not like they're already out there, right? The most advanced ones are in pretty secluded environments for very specific research projects. It's not like you're going to encounter one as you walk down the street, unless there's been a terrible mishap.
Paul McCartney bot?
I was thinking either that or it's Johnny Five from Short Circuit.
Okay.
So according to one forecast that the report cited, the EU could face a shortage of as many as 825,000 information and communications technology professionals, or ICT professionals. And on top of that, it predicts that 90% of all jobs by 2020 will require some level of digital skills. So the proposal calls for a revision of a digital competence framework so that they can at least help young people, and really people of all ages, mm-hmm, develop those basic skills so that they maintain a viable place in the workforce.
Yeah.
They also call for designing programs to encourage more young women into the fields of robotics and the related fields, related technical fields. And they say that the European Union and the member states within it should launch initiatives in order to support women in ICT and to boost their e-skills, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Essentially, this is a cultural shift saying, guys, let's stop sending a message that these are fields primarily
for dudes.
For dudes, right.
Because they weren't originally.
No.
And it's ridiculous that they are today.
And that there are people who are absolutely instrumental in the development of computer science who happen to be women. I mean, like, you know, you've got Ada Lovelace, who created the first frickin' computer programs, and you've got the woman who came up with the coin computer bug. Like, their contributions to computer science and to information and communications technologies have been phenomenal. But in general, we've created a culture, and when by we, I mean like everywhere.
Yeah, not the two of us in this room.
No, not. I have tried not to perpetuate it.
many humans, yes.
But there's been a culture that has discouraged women into going into those fields, to the point where men who are in the field may have, like, they may feel like, what are you even here for? Like, when they see a woman come into like an engineering class. And that absolutely needs to change for multiple reasons.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're saying, let's get on that. Let's create programs and change this perception that is based on fallacy so that we get brilliance that we're otherwise missing out on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, again, it goes well beyond just the idea of robots in that case. Mm-hmm. Also very inspiring. So they also call for a system to monitor job trends to see where jobs are disappearing due to robots and automation, as well as where are jobs being created because of robotics. So essentially saying, well, we want to make sure to steer people further away from these jobs that are increasingly being taken by robots. Mm-hmm. But we definitely need more people in these other areas that are the opportunities have opened up because of them.
Helping shape education and training.
Yeah, and this kind of goes in line with what we were talking about when we visited Georgia Tech and chatted about, you know, the idea of will robots take our jobs, and the answer is no, there are going to be other jobs. But there's the practical consideration of, well, how do we one, identify what those jobs are, and two, make sure that people are getting the education and experience necessary to do those jobs. It's easy to say, oh, well, now we've got all these more awesome jobs available. It's a lot harder to practically get people in the right place
where they can.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
So this is proactively thinking about that. And here's a really big one that is the gem of the draft as far as most people are concerned. Perhaps the European Union should, quote, introduce corporate reporting requirements on the extent and proportion of the contribution of robotics and AI to the economic results of a company for the purposes of taxation and social security contributions, end quote.
Huh.
Yeah.
So
the idea that, hey, if you're a company and you have replaced your human employees with robots, maybe you have to pay a certain amount.
Yeah, maybe those robots are employees.
Yeah. And you have to pay social security taxes for each of your robot employees, which sounds crazy because you're thinking like, well, robots are never going to collect on social security.
But you get back to that Crushing Fund.
Yeah, exactly. If you get to a point where the social security is being defunded due to the robots taking over more and more jobs, you still have the need for social security, but you don't have the money for social security. This is a kind of a temporary solution, because obviously this can't be supportable long term. As more and more things get automated, there becomes less of a need for money in the first place. But until that happens,
right. Yeah, there's an event horizon past which none of this is important anymore.
Right.
But that's that Star Trek jumpsuit future.
Exactly.
And we're a minute away from it.
Yeah.
And it does actually call out specifically, like, hey, maybe really we should all be thinking about a basic universal income.
Yeah, they say that every model state in the European Union should really seriously consider that it may not be the right, or it may not be the same approach for every single nation in the European Union, but it very well may be a conversation that should start to happen. Fortunately, we do have nations that are debating on using this, at least in test cases, or perhaps rolling out throughout an entire country, where we can look and see what happens. And if it ends up being a massive failure, we'll say, okay, don't do that. But we still need a solution to this problem.
But perhaps some other solution. Yeah, yeah. And then the last big section in the proposal is licenses.
Yeah. Now, they don't actually have, like, a specific, you know, you got to go and fill out Form A317 and get your robot license. They're laying out some things, some basic rules, guidelines they think that should be included for licenses. And they have two different sets, one for designers, for robot producers, and one for users. And I'm not going to list all of them because they're fairly extensive for both.
Yeah, but okay, yeah, they had a lot of really fun and interesting ideas of just suggestions of how you should go about roboting.
Yeah. Well, and step one of the ones under designers is, let's have a kill switch on the robots. Just turn it off.
Yeah. Just floop.
Yeah. So if it starts going Paul McCartney crazy, you know, that bot is going insane. And then, it just switches to wings mode or something. It turns off.
Yeah.
Make sure your robot is going to operate in a legal way. So don't make your burglar bot or mugger bot, as we mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. This, again, is for licenses for designers. Be transparent in the way the robot is programmed, as well as the predictability of robotic behavior. In other words,
maybe don't call it autopilot.
Yeah. That might be a really good choice to start off with. The idea being that, you know, if you are being sincere and honest in the way that your robot was designed and what it is supposed to do, you reduce the likelihood of some unintended consequence further down the road.
Yeah, I think of this part almost like the FDA guidelines for how you can market food on food packaging.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, yeah, like just be open and honest with people, and then they'll be able to make better decisions.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know. And that way you avoid a huge class action lawsuit further down the line.
Yay.
Everyone's happy.
Mm-hmm.
They say that developers should design tracing tools during the development stages of robots so that when a robot behaves in a particular way, it can be traced back to the design of the robot itself. So in other words, it's kind of like a tracer bullet in a way. You see the pathway that you can trace back. So when it exhibits a specific behavior, you find out why it behaved that way in that situation. And this could be good or bad. It could be that you want to find out, all right, well, that was interesting. We didn't anticipate that the robot was going to behave in that way, but it was beneficial. So let's find out what happened.
So let's find out what happened. Or
it could be that the robot behaved in a way that caused damage or harm to someone, and then you want to find out, why did it
get to the root of that problem? Yeah.
I never programmed my bot to bash someone over the head.
Yeah. Furthermore, it does also specifically say,
yep,
don't make humanoid robots.
Yes, it was just not so much humanoid.
Not humanoid, but human.
Like,
make it clear that they're robots.
Yeah. That's the most interesting part about the little license to developers to me, too, is like, make sure your robots are easily identifiable as robots. Don't make robots that people will think are people.
Yeah. No.
Or animals, I guess. Or,
no replicants, no reboot Battlestar Galactica Cylons, none of that.
I guess really it gets down to everything. Like, you wouldn't want a robot that's designed to look exactly like a tree, for example. But the tree is really a surveillance machine that's just constantly recording audio and video. Because if you just see a tree and you can't identify as a robot, you don't know that you're being, you know, watched.
Surveilled.
Yeah. Now, if you're in the UK, which, granted, not part of the European Union anymore, but you know you're being under surveillance all the time anyway.
I'm unduly upset about the idea of a robotic surveillance tree.
Yeah. The first thing we think of is don't make robots that look like people, but really it's saying don't make robots that don't look like robots.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean they, you know, like the robot just has to be identifiable as a robot. It could be in humanoid in shape, or it could just be like a bucket with wheels on it, but you know that it's a robot, right? It doesn't look like something else.
I love our future of bucket robots. Yes.
I'm referencing an actual robot that's hitting the streets of London right now. It looks like a bucket with six wheels.
Okay.
But it has a lid and it's meant to deliver small packages within 2 or 3 miles.
All right. I take back my ribbing about bucket robots.
I mean, you know, I guess you could call it looks kind of like a box with wheels. I said bucket because it's got curved edges.
Sure.
As opposed to rectangular, like
yeah,
Heart 90 degree angles, but yeah, bucket bots are a thing, man.
On to the users.
So they also had several. I've only picked three of them. One of them is respect human physical and emotional frailty. So don't make your robot do your bullying for you. Don't set your robot to make someone feel badly about themselves or shake them down for their milk money. You know, be respectful of other human beings.
Yeah. When you're using your robots, don't be mean to people with
them.
Yeah.
General rule of thumb for all the time, by the way. Don't be mean to people.
Don't be mean to people. Speaking of, you should respect other people's privacy.
Right.
So, not use robots to spy on people.
Right. So this is really relevant right now with drones that have high definition cameras mounted on them. The idea of, you know, using a drone to maybe look into someone's window or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, that this is specifically saying, hey, don't do that.
Yeah. Well, and furthermore, like, even if it's a situation that crops up where you suddenly realize that you've got a robot in a room and it's inappropriate for whatever reason to have that robot doing surveillance, turn off the surveillance.
Right.
Don't be a jerk.
And finally, don't weaponize your robot.
Just don't do it.
Yeah. Don't strap knives to your robot's hands and just tell it to go windmilling around or, you know. Paul McCartney needs no excuses, right?
Just
keep that robot under wraps. No, seriously, though. That's one of the rules that they had. Now, keep in mind, when I say rules, these are all proposals.
Right.
Even if this were to be adopted,
it would still just be a set of proposals.
Yeah, it's not like it's a legally binding document.
No.
So that gets to some of the reaction to the proposal. Some critics are saying that setting up guidelines this early, particularly for stuff like the concept of electronic personhood, when we don't even have robots that are close to being conscious, is more premature than not.
And really, that being this premature could stifle development.
Right. In other words, like, if you were to set up rules and regulations that say X is off limits, someone who is trying to innovate may end up not pursuing a path of innovation because they're afraid it's going to overlap on that restriction.
Sure.
And then what the critics are saying is that means we get a much slower rate of progression when it comes to...
We get no Paul McCartney bot at all.
Right. And think of the songs that we're going to miss out on from Paul McCartney bot. That's going to be copyrighted in some way that we haven't determined yet. They also point out that this proposal, again, is not legally binding legislation. So some people are saying, hey, what's the point of this anyway? It's not like if the European Parliament said this is a great idea, then anything would happen. That's not the point, I would argue. I would argue that the draft report is meant to say, let's start the ball rolling and actually officially get some committees in place to start forming what will be legislation.
Yeah, I get the argument in that it's saying, like, stop making meetings to make more meetings. But but in this case, it's necessary.
Well, especially since, like, we advocate all the time that we need to talk about this.
Yeah.
And then we say, hey, why are you talking about that? That's crazy.
Yeah.
But finally, we have that Social Security section that has people scratching their heads because on the face of it, it sounds like crazy talk to say a robot's not a person. Why would you have a robot pay into Social Security? A robot's never going to collect on Social Security. But when you look at that larger picture that we've mentioned a couple times now, the idea of a social system that starts to fold in on itself through lack of funding, it starts to make a little more sense, at least that you need to find a solution to that problem. Maybe having the robots, essentially the owners of the robots, paying into Social Security on behalf of the robots, maybe that ultimately doesn't make sense. But we definitely have to think about a solution that does make sense because that problem is going to be there either way.
Right.
So.
I mean, I was so pleased to get to dig into this document and so pleased again. Like I feel like I've said this like 9 times already, but like just good job, you guys. Like,
yeah.
High fives, EU.
Yeah.
For getting this done.
Yeah. I hope that this leads to more official action.
Yeah.
It would be great to see someone take the lead in this space and say, I don't care if you guys think this is silly. We have to prepare or else we're going to be caught with our
digital pants down.
Exactly. I was trying to come up with what adjective do I want to use for pants. Digital was perfect. So we don't want that to happen. Let's get ahead of it. And I think that this is a really interesting start. And I'm hopeful that it will continue. And that despite the jokes and the pranks and the you know, the good natured, like, and not so good natured jabs on Twitter, that we see progress because it's something that has to happen sooner or later, and I'd rather it happen sooner.
Yeah, it will happen whether we like it or not.
Yep.
So let's be prepared.
But I'm curious to hear what you guys think out there. You know, give it a read if you like it. It's 22 pages long. That includes the first 2 pages that have just like the table of contents and
fun stuff.
And then once you get into that, it's a super fast read, I promise you. You can even start skimming it in certain sections because they're reiterating stuff they've said. So you can really breeze through it in like a half hour easy. And that's if you're taking time to make notes. I know because I've done it. So check it out. It's available online. You can actually get the PDF and read through the whole thing. And I want to hear what you guys have to think about that. Like, do you have your own reaction to this? Are there certain things that you think are great ideas? Are you things that you feel are completely off base, off track?
Is there anything that you think that they missed entirely?
Yeah. And also, obviously, if you have suggestions for future episodes of Forward Thinking, you can send those to us as well. Our email address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com. Or you can drop us a line on Twitter or Facebook. At Twitter, we're fwthinking. If you go to Facebook and you search fwthinking in that little search bar, our profile should pop up. You can leave us a message there. We'd like to hear from you guys, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Johnny B. Good, host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon, which dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, Centratech, and explores how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed. Ray Trapani, a 26-year-old dropout who was a recovering addict with no tech experience, founded one of the hottest startups in 2017. Ray's company was endorsed by major credit card companies, celebs like DJ Khaled and Floyd Mayweather, and appointed a Harvard-educated CEO. It was going to be the next big thing, until it wasn't, because the entire company was one big lie. I'm excited to let you know that all episodes of Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon, are available and 100% ad-free exclusively with the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, so you can binge the entire season. So don't wait. Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.